Sound check, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Tackled the tough times, guys.
A hobo innovation consultant.
Yeah, that works.
I'm a hobo CEO. A hobo CEO. My company is wherever I go. I'm a hobo CEO. I'm a hobo CEO.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers or no trousers at all.
Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and hobos to the latest Hobo CEO podcast. I'm Chris Kirklands, joining you from Berlin, and joining me today is Nico Apple. Nico, do you copy?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm here. Still in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and I will be here for about, like, I think 10 days more. And then I come back to Germany, fly back to Germany, and we have a little reunion with, what do you suggest?
Sausages and sauerkraut.
So for sure it's going to be sausages and sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah. So this week we are going to be digging into tackling the tough times. Tools and techniques and ways, mindsets for digging yourself out of the hole of being in a negative mindset and other kind of problems which inevitably pop up running the unconventional hobo CEO lifestyle. Before we do that though, Nico, we are going to poodle over and peer into a fellow hobo's suitcase. Chris Dame, well-traveled hobo. He's been through 23 countries on his first traveling stint, and since then has continued to bounce around across the world. Let's find out what's in his suitcase. Well, joining us today from I can't say where you're from because that's one of the questions. Joining us today is Chris Dame, who is a fellow hobo, friend of a friend, just recently got in touch with. And so let's jump straight into the questions, Chris. So, sir, what in a sentence is funding your hobo existence?
I am an innovation consultant. I travel around the world helping people think up new concepts for the things that they do and ways to make things more so that they help people as opposed to just making profit and really making the world a better place. You can see a lot of my travel writings on traveltrue.net and a lot of the stuff that's in my bag on carryeverythingon.com.
Nice. And I think I'd just like to add that innovation consultants translated to you helping the Singapore government increase their birth rate.
That is correct. I have a lot of fun projects like that, helping bring water to rural Africa and India, to starting up little artisanal companies, to helping design Stephen Hawking's wheelchair interface, things like that. It's been a crazy ride and it's a lot of fun.
A hobo with a very broad palette of experience. Marvelous. So where are you located at the moment?
I am currently in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, for at least the next week, and then I'm off to Thailand, Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Tokyo before hitting America.
Marvelous. Proper hobo itinerary there. Excellent. So, sir, let's peek into your luggage. So, first question, what is the average weight of your luggage?
The average weight is probably around 10 or 11 kilos. All depends on exactly what I have with me at the time, which products I'm bringing around.
Nice. And cabin luggage only?
Of course. I use the Dorder Futura. I forget exactly how many liters it is, but it's the biggest possible size that can just slide in any kind of overhead compartment, and it's wonderful.
Nice. So, sir, what is most likely to get you questioned by airport security?
The thing most likely to get me questioned by airport security is the thing that actually has gotten me questioned once.
Yeah.
I have a Swiss-Tech multi-tool that I have on my keychain, and it is an amazing little tool. It's got a bottle opener, a serrated knife. It's got a little screwdriver on there, everything in there, but it folds up and looks just like a key on your keychain.
Uh-huh.
I've actually been carrying one of these around for about 12 or 13 years now, and I've been through dozens and dozens of airports, and no one has ever cared because it just looks like another key on your keychain. I got questioned by it once in the Shanghai airport because I was going through security. I had just gotten rid of all my keys, and it was just sitting there by itself, and there was no denying exactly what it was, and they confiscated it.
But they were, technically, this is like a kind of sharp edge. This is something you shouldn't be bringing on planes.
That is completely true.
So yes. Inside the luggage feature seems to be turning into helping terrorists. Here's another terrorist tip, is if you want to get a blade on the plane, make sure it's one of these key things.
I sincerely doubt that this tiny little serrated blade would be able to do anything aside from cut open a plastic bag, but yeah.
I'm sure you could terrorize some small animal or something.
I would be impressed if there were a lot of them on the plane. That's been a rare occurrence.
Anyway, moving swiftly on, what is the most expensive and least expensive thing that's worthy of your carrying?
The most expensive thing is obviously going to be my laptop. I have a MacBook. It's one of the old school metal unibody MacBooks it's probably going on 5 years old now, but it's just completely fast and works me through everything really good. The least expensive thing that I have is probably going to be a little combo eye mask earplugs piece that I got from some business class flight that I took. I think going through Dubai, where they just gave them out to everyone, and they've been extremely useful for getting a good night's sleep all over the place in various strange situations while traveling around.
Nice, yeah, that's always something in my luggage. Sort of ear protection and eye protection. Okay, finally, final question, sir. Your final question. Is there anything else we might like to know about your luggage?
Let's see. I think one of the strangest things that I tend to carry around with me is a speaker. I actually have this, it's called Jambox, I believe. Yeah, wow. Jawbone put it out. And it's kind of a big thing, and it's kind of an expensive thing to carry around with me, but I really enjoy being able to have conferences with people and not have to worry about the sound and actually watch movies and listen to music while I'm doing other things. And it can provide just like a really big booming bass. It's one of those, I discovered it when I was at South by Southwest a few years ago. I walked into a room and they were playing this music that was just filling the room, and I was amazed by it. And I said, where's the sound system? And he pulled out this little box, and I was just amazed, and I bought one right then. And it's honestly blown me away ever since.
Nice. What's it called again?
It's called the Jambox by Jawbone.
I might be picking up one myself.
Yeah.
Marvelous. Well, thanks very much, Chris Dame, for joining us and letting us peek inside your suitcase.
It's been a pleasure.
Cool. Hope to see you again soon. Splendid. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was fun.
So, tackling the tough times, Chris. We both identified that as one of the topics that is only rarely talked about. And I think there's a reason for that. Most people are talking about their achievements and successes and that kind of stuff most of the time, because naturally it feels good to them. At the same time, the truth is that much more people are struggling. And while the successes are sometimes rather rare and short, the times between them are rather sometimes tedious, boring, or even frustrating. Also inspired by recent events, we thought we'd talk about some of the ways we deal with the tough times.
Indeed. A great little kind of summary of this is delivered with Alain Botton's book, Status Anxiety, how he talks about in modern times through media and whatnot, people's success is over-glorified. And we kind of have this sort of notion that there's much more success than there really is, because we tend to hear the good news rather than the boring story of how you struggled for 4 years bootstrapping your business kind of thing.
Yeah. It reminds me of Mark Cuban having that very good art blog post where he talks about, I think he said, like, in business, you only have to be right once. And he compares it to sports, where you have to be much more consistent. And you have to have a good average of shooting the basketball or hitting the baseball or whatever your kind of sport is. But with business, it seems like you can have a lot of failures, so to speak. And then you do something that hits and everybody knows you for that. And it seems like it seems to a lot of people that meet you, that's the only thing you ever did.
And it's the failures, it's the misses, which you really kind of need, because that's where you do most of your learning, is from the failures. If you just kind of get it right first time, you haven't learned anything.
That's right. While I was talking to people about this and thinking about that, I also realized there's a certain level of tension and pressure, as you said, like status anxiety, or that just comes from hearing other people's success stories and basically trying patiently to wait to tell your own success story. And it also could seem a little dishonest at times that people talk about how we use language and how we talk about what we do. Because in language, we say something like, I'm an entrepreneur. Or, you know, as we both did in our past, we said something like, I'm a musician. Other people might say, I'm an actor, and whatever, you name it. The truth is, what you really mean, but what you're not saying, because it would be too unconventional in terms of the way we usually use our language, you should really say, I'm in the process of becoming an entrepreneur. I'm learning to be a musician. I'm learning to run a business. I'm moving or making my way towards being that kind of thing. So we are much more in a process than we are in beingness. But language kind of plays a trick here with us.
You know, Nico, this just gave me a great idea. I'm no longer going to introduce myself as an entrepreneur. I'm going to introduce myself as a failed musician.
That's great. That's great. Give us some stats how that increases or decreases your social life in the near future.
Splendid. Let's move on to our points, our ideas, our techniques of how us hobos deal with the tough times. Where should we start, Nico?
I think we should really start from what's the main thing, what's the key thing about this. As we both experienced lately and also identified, I think changing to a positive state or mood is one of the first goals you kind of have to go for. Yeah.
What do you mean by state? How do we define state and mood, Nico?
Okay, so a little definition, kind of dictionary background on that. We could say that people have emotions, and you know, emotions, they have that motion part in them, so they are a movement, and they should come up and fade away more like waves. If you are experiencing one emotion for a prolonged time, you could call it a mood. A state is the emotional part is a component of the state, but the state is much more underlying everything you do. So for example, in behavioral psychology and therapy, you'd say that the behavior or the quality of your behavior, which we could also name your performance, is really dependent not so much on the level of skill, but more on the state you're in. Maybe we can make an example from pickup life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so much about the world of pickup and, you know, walking up to a girl you don't know and making a good impression is about your state. It's not about having some kind of clever preconceived script in your head. It's just about kind of being in a good mood and being happy. And, you know, that's going to come across much stronger than if you've got some sort of skill in your mind. You think, okay, I've got to do step one, step two, step three. One thing I've noticed, and it's taken me many years to notice, is that my mood, my state, my kind of feelings change. They kind of go up and they go down and they go up and they go down. There's certainly things which I've figured out have kind of influenced that, but there's obviously some of it's out of my control, but what I do know is that my state will change, and So this idea of changing to a positive state is really key. Just realizing that you're in a kind of negative state and that it will change. I think for me, that's a big thing, because for many years running ArtWeb, and like I think still to an extent now, my kind of mood would very much be linked on how many new signups we'd get each month. And this was a fairly sort of arbitrary measure of how well the business was doing. I mean, not arbitrary, it was a bit of a measure, but still, you know, after kind of 5 years, the amount of which my mood would change, you know, I've got this stable business with lots of subscribers, but still I'm kind of getting down when there's a month where there's just less people. Mm-hmm. It was like absurd. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so I'm saying it's kind of made me realize that my mood is apt to fluctuate. So kind of realizing that and taking hold of it, moving it into a positive state.
Correct.
So how can we do that, Nico?
So
ideas?
We can just generally say that that the state is much more powerful and basically the basis of your behavior, your skill, and your performance. So if you want to do something, doesn't have to be the pickup situation, it can be the business situation that we derived this from, it's important to have that good state so you can actually do something that really helps your business. And how can we change states? What happened in our case? You were in a kind of negative state and you called me up, and I was more like coming from a neutral position, and then we talked about it and it changed your state. How did you experience that?
Yeah, just the act of like getting these things out of my mind and through my mouth into another human being's brain allowed me to sort of take a step back and see what was really going on. You know, it gave me some perspective, which is one of the things we'll get to in a minute. But talking, I found, was very therapeutic. Specifically, you know, talking with you, the partner, that was really kind of supportive. It really helped me kind of get the worries out of my mind and address them.
And if you don't have a partner at hand, you should have at least some kind of access to some kind of group or friends that go into a similar direction, so you can basically bounce off your doubts on their more hopeful perspective.
That's right. You need your homies. You need your comrades. You need you need the kind of supportive group. I mean, we come to this every episode. You know, getting involved with people who are kind of doing the kind of thing you want to do and who are like-minded, it's just such a golden tip.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you could also do something, just change your physical. Changing your physical state most of the times will also change your emotional or your mental state. So that's a lot of common techniques, but you can also do just, you can just maybe like shower, take a hot bath, move to a different place, go for a walk, stuff
like
that.
Do some press-ups.
Yes, exactly.
The physical thing. I mean, like, physical stuff is great. I always punctuate my day with various physical activities because I know it has a beneficial effect long-term, as well as also kind of helping change my mood and my mind.
Yeah.
Some, you know, like the anxiety buffer idea, just kind of giving yourself permission to do whatever it takes to bring yourself into a better mood, you know. If it's just kind of disconnecting for a while, reading a book, watching a movie, you know, giving yourself that permission to sort of pursue a good state. I think that's a key technique I have to offer. That's one of the posts on Hobo CEO's anxiety buffer. So
exactly.
Have a look at that one.
Exactly. And so what kind of things did we identify in terms of your how to change your perspective, your view on things, and the kind of meaning that you give to the events?
So we're now moving on to major point number two, perspective. I think this is key because if things are out of perspective, it's very easy to get into a negative mindset.
It's like classical psychology. After the bad feelings, for example, the anger or the sadness or whatever, there comes acceptance. So you gotta accept how things are.
Yeah.
And kind of level with reality. That's just how things are. That doesn't mean how they are going to be. So let's just accept that, and then you are on solid ground to move to what you can do about them.
So let me give a little example. In fact, I just mentioned it earlier on. I was saying that my mood was very much affected by the number of new signups we'd get on a monthly basis. And even after like 5 years, I still found my mood really going up and down, you know, really kind of worrying, you know, getting, oh my God, is this the end? Is this, oh my God, are things getting worse? Are they getting worse? I'd really start, my mind would be going off the scale. And, you know, talk about perspective, is that was such a micro perspective. Like if I pan out to the sort of macro view of things, I'd look at, okay, there's 5 years of consistent business there. There's a real strong pattern of repeat business. Moreover, since it's a subscription-based model, we've got this huge subscriber base that we've built up over those 5 years. So really, if we have no members for several months on end, we've still got all this income. This is a key example of perspective. I was allowing something that was really micro and not really a true indicator of how things were long-term affect my mood so much. So
it's always good to double-check what kind of data or whatever it is you derive your perspective from, because depending on how you look at things, they look actually quite differently. And you were just like comparing the number of signups per month or looking at it from a different perspective, like the, I don't know, monthly revenue or people staying with the service for a long time and so on and so forth.
I mean, let's not make any mistake. We're not saying that you should just start looking at the things which give you positive results. Like, you know, I'm sure any accountant knows you can kind of reframe the way the business books look to make it, you can cook the books, make things look better than they are. That's not really what we're saying, but it's just saying to make sure that you're not kind of getting caught up in one little detail, which is maybe not the whole picture, and giving you a kind of, because this is the point, is my negative mindset came from the fact that I had a narrow and misleading perspective. So the point is to kind of identify that, get away from it, and get that macro perspective.
So there's a couple of points in the perspective area. One of them is you got to level with reality. So you got to have acceptance. You got to accept things are the way they are. That's the only place from where you can actually take action and move on.
Another one is this idea of macro versus micro. This, in a sense, is the definition of putting things in perspective, is if you're kind of too close up and looking at things on a micro level, you're not seeing things from the full perspective. So
exactly.
And so macro versus micro, what else can we say about perspective, Nico?
I think another advantageous perspective, helpful perspective on things, is that if things are failing, that's always an opportunity to learn something. Because as long as everything you're doing works, you're not learning anything. This is a classical reframe, basically. It's the always look on the bright side of life kind of thing. If things are failing, it indeed is a chance to learn something. Limited resources force you to evaluate what and prioritize what you can do. It's a classic thing, as Tim suggested in the 4-hour work week. If you'd only have 2 hours to work each day, what would you really do? I mean, bad times bring up the essential stuff, and that's a really good thing. There's a cleansing to that, and thinking about something bad happening from that perspective gives me much more energy, much more positive drive.
It kind of makes it a win-win situation. It's like, even if things don't work out, it's still an opportunity for you to learn.
Yeah.
So moving on from putting things in perspective, our final main point, taking away unnecessary pressure. One of the sources of the bad times, the tough times, is pressure. Pressure coming from external sources. This can really affect one's mindset. It can actually be the sole reason for the tough times. We all have pressure from various different sources, internal and external. And they can really affect the way you are. They can affect your state, and they can indeed create the tough times.
I even think, Chris, that the pressure we experience is what makes the times the tough times, in a way. I mean, like, we often experience that pressure as coming from the outside, from external sources, from people we are working with, or wives, girlfriends, spouses, whatever. But really, the pressure is inside of us. I think there's a good reason for that, and we have a little theory on that, so maybe you can explain.
One of the sources of pressure is this notion of fake it till you make it. It seems quite popular in entrepreneurial circles, is to kind of think and act like somebody that's already a billionaire. And, you know, it comes up in being a musician and actor as well. And I don't know, I could almost argue that that's kind of what you've got to do as a musician and an actor when you're on stage. You kind of have to fake the fact that you're confident, even though you're sort of peeing in your pants.
Yeah.
But off stage, anyway, if you're kind of sat there working your laptop, if you've kind of created this image in your mind that you have to be this huge, successful entrepreneur, it's going to create a lot of pressure, especially, you know, going on months and months while you're still there buying the economy coconuts or whatever it is, or, you know, just eating from the cheapo menu.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of incongruity with where you actually are.
Exactly.
In a sense, you've got to forgive yourself and you've got to be more down to earth about things. And, you know, I think it's fine to be ambitious and to have these goals, but you've got to understand that, you know, you're going to get there step at a time. And it's okay that you're kind of failing. It's okay that you're not there. It's, you know, forgive yourself for not being a billionaire.
Yeah.
What you don't need to do is to give yourself unnecessary pressure about, you know, the fact that you're not maybe where you want to be. It's a key difference. It's taking away the unnecessary pressure.
Okay.
Don't kind of make yourself feel bad about things. Don't try and keep up with people that you can't keep up with. You know, if you're in a room full of millionaire entrepreneurs and you're the poor one, you're the odd one out, don't feel you have to sort of try and keep up with them by buying expensive cocktails.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm on the bottom rung of the ladder, guys, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to have tap water.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's also like a macro versus micro kind of thing. It's like a zooming in, zooming out. So you have to be consciously naive. Like, you have to give yourself permission to ignore some of the things that you just want to ignore because they would just interfere with you taking action and believing in whatever your idea is. And that, you know, that's the same for trying to become an entrepreneur or being an artist, musician, painter, photographer, or whatever it is.
Indeed. Indeed. So one of the other key things, possibly the main thing, is a lot of pressure we feel is coming from what other people think. And I think this is particularly of interest to other hobo CEOs out there, is because we're leading such an unconventional lifestyle, we're the nail that sticks out. And as the Japanese say, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down the hardest. So yeah. You've got to really, really understand that and really, really make provisions for that. You know, our kind of lifestyle, our mindset and what we're doing, even just being an entrepreneur in so many circles, is going to be almost a taboo. It's going to be something that we're going to get intense pressure to sort of conform with what other people are doing. So we've really got to be aware of that and be prepared to deal with that. There's two ways. One of them is the positive way. One of them, as we've mentioned before, is to seek validation from the right people, is to seek out other fellow hobos, other fellow entrepreneurs, people with the same kind of mindset who are going to support you, who are going to really reinforce what you're doing. People, ideally, yeah, people who are above you in this and who are actually going to pull you up.
Yeah.
And then the other side is taking away people who are going to pull you down. Don't expect to get validation from, like, old friends or relatives, people who've kind of known you in a previous part time of your life and who are maybe kind of stuck in a very different way of life and it just doesn't fit with what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Really don't even try to get validation from there. It's like choose your battles wisely, avoid those battles.
It's very funny because everybody, I mean, either the people that you call the right people or the people that you'd definitely always get just in an argument with, I mean, everybody, including ourselves, everybody is trying to defend and confirm their own beliefs and their own belief system. So if you're talking to somebody who's on the other side of what you're doing, who doesn't believe in entrepreneurship or who doesn't believe in being an artist or whatever it is, they are always gonna argue against your ideas and your approach and your hopes and dreams and the probabilities of whatever you wanna happen or make happen or create. And if you talk to the right people, since they will also try to confirm and defend their view on things and view on reality, they might they will provide you with a lot of validation. And you can, to a certain degree, choose that consciously. And you can basically, you can go to certain people because you know that they're gonna give you a boost in a certain direction, and be smart and avoid talking to people who are always gonna devaluate your ideas and what you're doing, and you know.
Exactly, that's real gold. That. Let me finish with an example of exactly this. A good friend of mine, Robert Lang, is the CEO of a company called Gengo.com. It's like a kind of the Mechanical Turk of translation. It's like a human-powered translation software service. They're doing really well. They're getting a lot of traction right now. We used to share an office in Tokyo, and right back then, he was just having the idea of Gengo, and he just kind of started. It was him and Matt, and they were just, in this share office, not making many money from the company, doing client work on the side. But Rob kind of really wanted to pursue this business idea. I remember I was going for a walk with him, and he was saying he felt a bit of pressure from his wife about pursuing this new, dangerous, uncertain business opportunity as opposed to doing something more stable. And I was going, Rob, you've got to go for it. You've got to man up and believe in what you're doing, and not kind of get pulled backwards by people who don't believe in what you're doing. Sure enough, him and Matt pulled together, and they ended up getting a load of angel funding and venture funding, and now they have a really successful company with 20 or 30 employees or something. It's just so key. If Rob had been kind of pulled back by that pressure, it might have prevented that company from flourishing as it does now.
Yeah.
So it's a real simple thing. It's just kind of, as you just said, Nico, is actively avoid the people that are going to drag you down, and actively seek out the people that are going to pull you up.
Be a little in control of your reality bubble. You know. That's the funny thing. You have to be aware that you are tricking yourself a little at the same time, but that has to be okay. I mean, otherwise you can question everything. Like, that wouldn't really lead to any level of certainty where you could ever take any kind of action.
You're going to end up like Descartes, and you'll just get stuck on "I think, therefore I am," and that's the only axiom that you can take as true.
Yeah. Nice one.
Marvelous. So on that philosophical note, I think that brings us to the end of our comments on tackling the tough times.
Yeah.
So, thanks
really good stuff.
Again for listening.
Really good stuff.
We totally forgot to do any social media mentions, but we won't next time. Feedback and comments and whatnot, we like to promote on the show. So any mentions we get, we'll mention you next time. Don't forget to give us a review on iTunes.
Please do.
And as Nico says, especially if you enjoy listening to the show.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
We'll be waiting for you on Hobo CEO and at Twitter. Hobo CEO is our handle on Twitter. So, look forward to having you tune in next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunching, launching, morality, morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and super.